This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Hello, welcome to Indie Comic Book Noise, episode 832.
That's not that right, Phil.
It could be right. With me is Kevin from Toronto or around there, and Andrew from LA.
Hey, Phil.
Hey. That's all I got.
Jeez. That's terrible.
Where are you?
I don't know. From? I have no clue, but I think Ottawa.
You think?
Yeah.
All right, so...
Episode 370.
832, close enough.
Sadly, we are Super Steve-less yet again.
No, I think at this point it's abandoned. I think he left us to die. He was like, these guys are fucked. I'm out of here.
Does he listen to the episodes? I don't know. Like, the last one was, you know, it was there.
No, he promised us he would be back for sure at the Halloween one.
Yeah, and I was like, another 8 weeks? I'm like, oh,
anniversary one, but so he'll be there.
I'm just saying, he needs to read some more indie comics.
Yeah, too much. It's because of the event, I guess. It's just too much Secret Wars.
Well, he could be reading other events by other publishers.
Mm-hmm. So, Kevin, what do you got for us today? Start us off.
I didn't read anything. No, that's not exactly true.
Well, that's okay.
But I went to a place called Fan Expo Canada for many days.
Ooh, tell us all about it.
Well, I went in on the Wednesday. Because I think it's better when you go in a day before rather than staying a day later.
Yeah, it's a long con, Wednesday to Sunday.
Well, it's Thursday, but if you travel...
Oh, is it? Oh,
yeah. No. But if you travel Thursday, it's like you gotta sort of run around because you can get in there too in the afternoon, unless you don't care. I don't super care about getting in there at 2, but
it doesn't matter. There's so many days to work with. You don't really need to get in there early.
Yeah. So I got in there Wednesday and went to a Blue Jays game. How about that? Baseball.
Gross.
No comment. I don't care about baseball.
And you're
whoa. I thought you guys are supposed to love... Oh, no, it's football that you guys love. But isn't baseball America's pastime?
Exactly.
I don't think it's been America's pastime for 30 years at least.
So boring.
So would you say football is America's pastime then?
I would say football, although basketball is very popular. Not for me, per se, but...
I would say crime and violence.
I think the ratings have basketball coming up on football. And then baseball, and then hockey somewhere after that. Sorry, Kevin.
Well, it's been years since, like, I've went to a baseball game. I think maybe... Like, the Blue Jays were probably doing better like they are now last time I went to a game.
I don't want the life story on the friggin' Blue Jays. I want to know about the Comic-Con.
That was the highlight of Comic-Con, Phil.
This is indie comic book noise. There's no rules.
Go write in your little diary, your little blog. Jeez.
No, I was just marveling at some of the stuff. Because, you know, I'm always into the hockey, so I'm just there. I'm like, oh, so this is what happens at a baseball game.
I'm sorry. It's this computer update. It's got me grumpy today.
Oh, but I did buy some comics on the Wednesday, though. Like, I had to head over to the Silver Snail.
Wait, at the Blue Jays games? Yeah.
Because, you know, when you leave on a Wednesday, the bad thing about leaving on a Wednesday, too, is you can't pick up your stack from your shop.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true, eh? Yeah.
So then you're like, you're like out of comics, and then you haven't read anything, and then you know, it's a whole mess. So then I'm like, well, I got to go pick up some comics.
How long of a haul is it? Do you fly or take a car or train or
drive?
Are you roughly famous?
Long enough, but it's not...
He drives like an hour and a half, 2 hours.
It's not unreasonable. Well, that's not
bad. I thought it might be like 6 or 7 hours.
I have to go like 6, 7 hours when I do it.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, if you were in Thunder Bay or something, like, you just wouldn't be able to do it. You would have to fly or something.
Well, they must have trains up there in Canada.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's another way out, the train.
Yeah, if it passes through, you know. Sometimes train service is a little...
You don't want to take the bus, though, because people get beheaded on the buses here in Canada.
That was once. It's well, never happened to me.
Once is enough for me.
Welcome to commuting noise. Oh, your podcast about how to get around Canada.
Well, you know, they did build that tunnel now between the Billy Bishop Airport, which is on Toronto Island, and mainland Toronto. I don't know. Is that sound accurate? I don't know if you would say mainland. But anyways, like, I had Mr. Groot with me, so he said, I gotta go see this tunnel, because they actually had a TV program on the building the tunnel and how long it took them, because you're building, like, sort of, you know, under the water type of thing.
Oh, thanks, Dora.
Yeah, this is commuting noise.
Sorry, in LA, we tend to get obsessed with traffic and traffic patterns. Yep. Anyways, back to the show. Now, this is at the the Terry Fox Convention Center or whatever?
Metro Toronto Convention Center? Close enough.
Terry Fox, that's Ottawa, isn't it? Because we have a road.
I figured everything's named after Terry Fox. Probably. Like, I don't know.
Well, I think you need some hockey players in there, too. What else did I do Wednesday? I think that was it for Wednesday.
No, fuck Wednesday. Con.
The con?
Convention. Concentrate on that.
No, I actually went to some places before the con. It's just weird with the con now. Because you don't know if you're going to get any deals or the pricing on things because of the... You know how the Canadian dollar is, so like buying like the Japanese stuff at a bookstore is actually cheaper than buying it at the con.
Yeah, it's expensive at the cons from what I've seen too.
Because they've like re-priced things, and it's like before things were too expensive at the bookstore, and now that the dollar has fallen, it's like the things are like cheap at the bookstore. It's like they're not adjusting their prices. They're just going by what the price is on the book, like with the fluctuating dollar. So I'm like, I gotta pick up some stuff at the bookstore now. I gotta pick up some pop vinyl too.
So you open up the business section to see what the currency is trading at before you go shopping?
Pretty much. I don't think that's probably not an American thing, but I'm sure it's an Australian thing, a Canadian thing, you know, other countries. I think it's fairly common. So yeah, I got there around, I'm gonna say like 2:30, because I used to go in the lineup, wait out in the sun, and then you get there by, you get in at like, I don't know, 2:10 or whatever. Like it used to take longer to get in, but they resolved that issue. But then you get in there and like Artist Alley is like deserted because none of the artists are there like Thursday or early or anything usually.
No, that's normal though.
Yeah, so I'm like, why do I want to get in early? I'm gonna carry around this jam piece with me all day and not get anything done on it.
Do you ever contact the artists ahead of time on social media or whatever?
No, I'm not that ahead of the game, I guess. I don't know. Like I know people do that, but I always think
it's only the big names you really have to do that for. Like some of the big guys will do that. Like that's the only way you'll get a sketch.
And it's only a square. It's like, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes. I don't know, I guess it could be an hour depending, you know. Like, my squares are pretty small. Like, when you have 25 squares on a page. But then you don't finish it. Then it takes you forever, and you're, like, carrying this thing around for years.
How many do you have going on currently?
I only have the one right now.
Oh, okay. So you don't do, like, your Jerry McDade's where you have 100 going at once.
No, maybe if I went to more cons. I'm thinking if I lived in the States, you could probably, in a con, like, flush area, you know, you could hit one up every weekend.
Well, I think why he does that is that way he can have multiple artists at the same show. You know, artist A is on this jam piece. At the same time, artist B can work on an entirely separate jam piece.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, it worked out really well with the jam piece at TCAF, because you're pretty much just going down the table and everyone's sort of like available, really easy to get things done there. At a regular con, I don't know, it's just there's a lot of traffic and other things you have to deal with. That's what I was thinking. My perfect con would be like a TCAF and then a fan expo combined together type of thing, but then I'm like, you'd probably ruin the TCAF part of the thing. So you know, it's good enough on its own. Like, I don't know. I guess it was, like, you usually get a lot of the superhero stuff at the Fan Expo one. That's really the Marvel DC. But that the Marvel DC thing seems to have just totally melted away from Fan Expo. Like, there's like no publishers anymore at Fan Expo. It seems like it's like they have all their stuff, like their horror, their animation, their celebrity autographs.
It's a shame, because I used to like going to the publishers too. But
yeah,
what about the smaller public? Like,
well, that's what I mean, because even some of those don't.
Image.
No. Image showed up once. They didn't get any traffic.
Yeah. And I love that booth. I love the Image booth. It sucks that they went away.
Like the big publishers there are like Xenoscope. I know Phil likes them.
Yeah. Well, I got a good deal on all their books, so that's why I got into them. But Image, their problem was all their books were full price. Like, there were no deals. So I got some good issues or single issues straight from the creators and stuff. But it would have been nice if maybe they had a bit of a deal on their trades or something. Like, there was nothing to really get me to buy their trades, because I can just wait and go get them at my store, you know?
Yeah, but when Marvel had a booth, it was like for signings and other related stuff. And then
Marvel booth was garbage.
And then DC was there, and Dark Horse was there 1 year, and then Archie and the or Valiant. But that was, I don't know, everything seemed to have peaked like a few years ago.
Like, what about Canadian companies like Arcana? Are they there?
I don't think so, they were so small that I don't really remember seeing them.
The problem is that with these Canadian conventions, a lot of them, all they care about now is like the TV stars and stuff like that. So they're forgetting about the comics.
Yeah, and it seemed like four or five like comic people canceled just before the show. And it seems like after you get 3 months of emails about what celebrities are going to be there, when they're canceling, it's like Fan Expo was scrambling to get someone to replace them. So I heard some cool stories about people that got their celebrity autographs and everything. And I'm like, oh, that sounds awesome. But, you know, like, I know they had some, like, Agent Carter or what have you from all the related stuff there. I think they were supposed to have a Star Trek Voyager, like, reunion and Hogwarts reunion. And
they do a lot of that down here. I'm getting ready for the Long Beach Comic Con, and I have gotten more emails about the lady from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the Sky, and John Barrowman. Like, I'm getting constant emails about those two.
Yeah.
Like, I get like, for every five emails of them, I get one about who the comic book people are. But that's who brings in people, you know, people want to meet.
Yeah.
Chloe, I apologize, I don't know her name, but
no, they want Games of Thrones and Walking Dead people.
John Barrowman. I mean, I'd go see John Barrowman. I mean, he's supposed to be pretty funny.
Who's that?
He's on Arrow. He was on Torchwood as Captain Jack.
Oh, Harkness. Okay. Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, and he just seems like a real fun guy. Everything I've heard, he's
started
a funny.
Started on Doctor Who.
Funny character.
He's good. Yeah, I liked his character a lot.
Like, I still enjoy going to the show, but it's like peak comic content. It is not. Like, there's, I remember when there was like a DC Nation panel and everything, there was a lot of energy, and now like no DC panels. Or
even the horror side, which I was big on, got really small, which sucks for me.
Yeah, I'm just glad that they split it into two buildings now, though. There's like a north building and a south building. So in the other building that I rarely go to, there's all the celebrity stuff, so you can like easily avoid that. I did go visit it this year, though. And I saw, like, a lot of Pop Vinyl and other stuff there. And I'm like, oh, this is decent. I actually bought something on that side, too. Which is, I guess, a first time for everything.
What'd you buy?
What did I buy? Let me see here.
Well, you said you bought something over there.
Yeah, well, that's Marvel-related content on that side. So I don't know
if it's embargoed from discussions
here. Yeah, I don't know if I should mention it.
Nope.
I'll mention some other trades I got, though.
Well, I did see you tweeted some very deals. You got some District of Columbia comics. What? Trying to use a little code here so people don't know we're talking about DC.
No, I got some... what's the company? Fawcett Comics? Is that the...
Yes.
I got some Captain
Before
Marvel.
Before they got sued by out of existence by DC.
Yeah,
that's not true.
Because apparently you don't outsell Superman or you get sued. But yeah, I remember listening to like an episode of Comic Geek Speak, and they went into like Captain Marvel's history for 3 hours. And I was like, this sounds really interesting. So I sort of like checked into the Golden Age stuff to see if it was the, the text heavy novel type of, how Golden Age comics can be like, it's just drenched in text. And I check out the Captain Marvel stuff and I'm like, it's not that, like, there's room for the art to breathe and everything. So I'm like, that's a good sign.
I really have a hard time with Golden Age. There are almost none of it I really read and can get through.
It's so colorful too. Like there's always bright reds and yellows and greens and blues, and it can be really exciting. But I've also read some other stuff where I'm just like, I can't make it through this. Like I think there was some Kirby stuff or something where it was just like, this is like reading a novel. I'm like, this isn't too fun.
Someone just wished you were dead there.
Probably, but it's true. Like I've read some other like stuff with some timely characters, and it was good.
I think the criticism is accurate that usually the dialogue just reflects the action that's going on. It tends to be super racist, and very repetitive as well. The plots tend to cycle through the same stuff.
Yeah, that's why I have to be very careful what I pick up. But anyways, enough with those companies that were later swallowed by other companies that we don't talk about on this podcast. No, I did find some other stuff. I don't know, I don't know if they've been to Fan Expo before, but Charles Soule was there.
Oh, nice. He's a big name.
Yeah, so I'm like, that's someone different. Like, you usually have your usual guests in there, and I'm like, I don't remember if he's ever been there before, but I went to... I'll have a story from Marvel Noise about something that was funny, I think. But anyways,
he also has his indie books too.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. Like, I got some Letter 44, and he also had this mini comic there. It was a Strong Man Presents El Tagger and El. Jeez, it's a Tagger.
Huh?
I'm pretty terrible at pronunciation.
A tiger or a tagger?
Both.
Like a graffiti guy or both. An animal with four legs?
Both.
So he's a tiger that goes around spray painting shit.
But he's also a tiger he's a graffiti artist feline.
I gotta write this down. I thought it was cool. Like some of these guys, he's a writer. So I'm like, well, how much, like, I don't know about everything about his indie roots, but I'm like, how much is he gonna have from his other stuff? Like, I know some of the Immonens, they usually have some different stuff there that's like real indie.
Anything good? They're coming to Long Beach. Anything I should buy off them?
If they have that, what is it? Red Olive? Jeez, I can't remember now. I don't know. It's left my brain. This mini comic I did get. It's sort of like folds out weirdly. It's like one piece of paper, but it's like folded in different directions. So you unfold it once, you fold it another time to like read it. So I'm like, I'm always down for some crazy indie comic that's folds out in a weird fashion. And you got to read it properly.
That's Harry Moore's Fell Beast that I talked about. It's like that.
And then I get into the more like traditional back issue bins too. So I'm like looking for like old Valiants, like Unity 2000, the series that never completed by Jim Shooter. So I found like issue 2. Then I checked online later. I'm like, how many did they print? And I don't know if they're $30 or whatever. Not that a lot of people want them, but I don't know. Some of these things, like if they only print like 100 copies, but 101 people want them, then the price skyrockets, even though it's not really in demand by anyone. I don't know, I find that some of the old, like the Claim or whatever, some of the stuff spikes like that. So I did find some, like, Warren Ellis Shadow Man and some crazy stuff like that. So I was like, yeah, I'm down for that. And then sort of filling holes in some other stuff, like Dreadstar. Because I think Steve wants me to do a whole thing on Dreadstar, and then if I hate it, he'll be like, no, Kevin, no.
Dreadstar's great. You're going to like it. If you like Starlin in general.
They just released a new omnibus of that the other week.
Yeah, I got most of the... Well, I don't know how far my issues go, but I think maybe the first 21 issues. So I don't know. I don't know how far that omnibus would go. But it was easy for me to get in issues, so I thought, why not? I also did make a trek on Saturday to The Beguiling, which is sort of like the indie headquarters for all alternative stuff in Toronto, to pick up Copra Volume 2, because I read Volume 1, and I have some issues from TCAF, but I didn't have this, like the volume in between.
So Copra's still ongoing, man?
I think so. Like, he has maybe 24, 22 issues? I don't know, it's... Doesn't seem like it's ending anytime soon.
Well, I thought he got tapped to do something for DC.
He did something for Marvel.
Marvel, DC. What's the difference, Kevin? You can keep track.
Yeah, well, he was on one of the, I think, the Ultimates, but that went away. And then he did something for Secret Wars. But otherwise, I don't know of anything else that he's doing. It was also kind of neat that I was... Or maybe not so neat if you're, like, maybe creators are sad when their books are in the bargain bins. Like, I've had these conversations sometimes before, like, yeah, Tomb of Dracula for $40 or whatever it is, and then they see their own book, like, beside that, like, remaindered. Or... like I think Chris Ware has written comic strips just on how sad it is to see his books remaindered or whatever. But digging through the bargain bin at the Silver Snail, I saw Amelia Cole and The Enemy Unleashed. And it's like, regular price, $22. This, $5. I'm like, that's the same price as the, like, I would pay for the digital. So now I need to buy, like, some of the digital issues in between. Because I remember we covered, like, the first volume.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think this is, like, the third or fourth volume or something. So I'm like, I gotta fill in the gap in between. So I was kind of happy to see that, because I was like, yes, something good in this bargain bin, because you never know about things like that. Then I picked up some, like, Image books, but they're not really... You know, the Image books are so cheap sometimes to begin with, like, you're not getting much of a deal at the con on stuff like that. But I did pick up, like, Copperhead.
Yes.
And then Invisible Republic and Starlight, so... All things I think someone has covered. Starlight.
I think it was Steve that was covering Starlight.
Yeah.
I thought we were all buying it, though.
I don't know. Maybe someone dropped off.
Did you go to any of the panels?
No, because I didn't think it was a great year for panels. Like, I don't know. In previous years, they've had, like, some creator spotlights or something. But I went to some of the sketch duels. Like, there was Del Mundo versus Paquette versus... Rudy, that's who it was. So that sketch duels are always good. Like, they're usually pretty funny and everything like that. And there were some things from the sketch duel that we kept on quoting throughout the entire weekend. It was pretty funny, because, you know, people always ask, what was the weirdest thing that you've had a sketch request for, and then they give, like, their weirdest thing from, like, a professional, and then the weirdest thing from a fan. And then, like, one of them went into a whole story about, I don't give them this sketch they want. I give them the sketch they need. So that was pretty great. And also, the thing that makes, I think, the convention great is, like, the other stuff you do. Like maybe the Jays game and the meetups and the other, you know, comic shops you hit and everything like that.
So you might as well just skip the convention, then.
Well, it's almost like that sometimes. Like, that's almost... Like, if your convention's going downhill, it's like you might go to the convention for a day or something and then hit the comic shops and meet up with your friends. Because you don't really need a convention to do that. It's a good excuse, though. Like, oh, yeah, I got to go down there and everything. So, like, one night ended with, like, 2 hours of trivia at midnight while everyone was pretty drunk by that point. And it was a listing type of thing where, like, list 15... Bounty Hunters from Star Wars. I don't know if you know the card game, but it was, you had to, like, it starts out with a low number of things you have to list, and then you can call the other side if you don't think they can like name that many.
So at one point, I played that a few months back, actually.
Yeah. So the, of course there like there was a couple Marvel guys on one side. So like they're like, oh, name 15 comic journalists, and they're like, there's no way you guys can name 15, and then it's like just with the Daily Bugle, like we had that down pat. So a good time was had by all. I guess that's my long-winded Fan Expo review.
Well, I do agree with you, Kevin. For me, it's seeing people that I usually want to see at the show has now come to be the top part of the show, usually.
Yeah.
Hanging out with your buds.
I wish they would have more comic content, but I don't know. I don't know if I see it going that way. So I don't really have a perfect show. Like, you kind of got to go to both shows to get a... This is the life you lead when you read mainstream comics and you read indie comics. You kind of have to go to more than one show because it doesn't satisfy you completely going to either one.
Well, nothing wrong with two shows a year. It seems pretty reasonable.
I think so. So what have you guys been reading?
Well, I recently reread all 24 issues of 28 Days Later by Boom Comics. It's by Michael Allen Nelson. I don't know if you've ever read his stuff, but he does a lot of Boom stuff.
Yeah, I talked a lot about Valen the Outcast. I don't know if you remember.
Yes. Yeah. And I enjoy his work a lot, like a lot of his Boom work. That was Boom?
Yes. In fact, I only think I've ever, at the most of the cons I go to, I've only ever seen him at the Boom booth.
It's mostly Boom there. He's done. He's also done like Supergirl, a couple things like that. But yeah, it's pretty much just Boom stuff he's done.
I was going to say maybe Dynamite?
I'm not sure.
I don't see Dynamite in a lot of the shows I go to. I do see Boom at almost everyone, though. They're pretty, I don't know where they probably must be based here, I would guess.
Yeah. Los Angeles, it says in these books. And so this is 24 issues, and you can buy a really cheap omnibus for like under $30 that collects it all. Like, it's a great price. And the first artist on it is Declan Shelvey.
Thunderbolts artist.
Is that who it is? He's Thunderbolts. He's really good. I like his stuff a lot. And then later on, it switches to like Alexandro Aragon. And the cool thing is, I didn't even notice that it switched artists almost. Like, it was. A nice enough tone where it was like I didn't even notice till I saw in the book later, so I was happy with that. But basically, this takes place between the first movie and the second movie, 28 weeks later. Sorry, not months. And the first movie, did you guys see it? The first movie?
I did see the first one. I didn't see the second one.
Basically,
but the only thing I remember is the zombies run really fast.
Not zombies.
Yeah, he says they're not zombies.
It's because they're living humans, but they're infected with rage. It's totally different.
Is that an acronym? Yeah, it's rage?
Completely different. It has nothing at all.
They look kind of.
They
like
run
zombies.
Really fast.
Yeah, this was the first time where in film we started seeing them run fast.
Running zombies.
Mm-hmm. Some people didn't like running zombies at first, but at the end of the day, they are pretty freaky. Like, it's when you see running zombies, like, it's a lot worse than the slow ones, you know. It gets a lot scarier sometimes. And this takes place between the two movies. At the end of the first movie, there were three survivors. One of them, Celine, the girl character, this is about her. And they do hint at what happened to the other characters. I won't say what, but it's pretty brutal. And so basically these American journalists hire her to go back into the affected zone, which is just the UK. And so she does it for her own reasons. And right from the start, things go to hell. Basically the Americans are brought in to kind of try and control the situation. And this is after a lot of the affected have died in a lot of the places. So there's not as many because, like I say, they're not undead. So they starve to death, things like that. And so they go in there and the Americans destroy their ship. So most of them end up dying right off the bat. One of them goes blind and they're stuck in like an infected part. And things pretty much go to hell to there. They have to deal with like a group of people that pretty much hold their friend ransom until they go and save their son who's locked in a building and stuff. They'd have to deal with like, there's this army guy that for some reason, you don't know why at first, but who's after Celine and just doing everything he can to hunt her down. And it's really crazy because there's like one point where American soldiers are helping Celine and the other survivor out. And all of a sudden that guy shows up and just takes them all out. Like it's almost like a Terminator type situation until their showdown. And eventually the book ends up where the second movie is, when the affected are starting to get crazy again and get all the survivors. And it's just a really, really good, like, this is an amazing, like, this should have been the second movie. Like, this is better than both of the movies, really. It's the perfect 28 Days Later story for me.
It sounds like you could pick it up without having seen the movie, though, right? I assume.
Definitely. Yeah, you don't need the movie. It does, obviously, you get the bonus stuff, like what happened to the other two characters that survived and some of the stuff at the end that goes with the second movie. But yeah, you definitely do not need to see the movies to enjoy this. Because it would just be like a zombie tale, you know, like an original zombie story. But it's definitely worth picking up. If you like the first movie or both movies, this is a must read.
I think I might have saw that.
Well, at Fan Expo, actually, the con you were at, I got a couple volumes signed by Tim Bradstreet, who did the covers, which are beautiful, and from the writer.
Yeah, I think, especially those early booms, I think there might have been a pretty fair amount of overprinting or something, because I remember you used to be able to get that old stuff for cheap. I think the newer stuff, they've been a bit better about not having the crazy print runs. But I remember when you can still find all that Stan Lee boom stuff in the quarter bins.
Yeah.
Although I bought all that stuff off the shelves.
Did you? Oh, God.
Yeah. I liked it. I mean,
some of it was cool. That was like the Traveler and all that stuff.
Yeah. Because it was like Mark Waid. That was, I think, when Waid maybe was just stepping down as creative director. Maybe he was still.
Well, it was right at the end of his Irredeemable and all that stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah. So maybe, I don't know if he had stepped down yet or was in the process of, but he wrote one of them. Like they put Chris Roberson, like they put Carrie Andrews did the art. They had like, you know, big names on it, or at least relative big names.
Yeah. And some people did like some of the titles. Like there was, I forget what the other ones were, but I know Traveler people liked a bit.
That's crazy. I picked up two Boom books within last weekend.
I still like Boom.
Which is rare for me.
Boom's a great company still, I think.
Yeah. I think what I like is it's a real range of like, they have like the kids stuff. They have horror. They have the movie adaptations. They've tried some, they have some crime books. Like they really mix it up.
And that's the thing. Yeah. Their horror line is usually great stuff for me. Like I love the Hellraiser stuff. Pretty much anything they put out. Nightbreed.
I don't know if you guys read the recent Welcome Back or The Spire.
I did.
The Spire.
Yeah.
That was Stokely, right?
Yeah.
The artist?
Yeah, it was cool art, that one.
Well, speaking of big-time names, now that Steve isn't here, I can force you guys to look at books that I want to talk about. So I sent you all links to some work by Kenny Kyle.
Yeah, this sort of reminded me of when I sent you that whole Yankee thing. Like, this is... like, we like our weird, crazy books where you're not entirely sure what's going on all the time.
Kenny's a lot of fun. He's a local Southern California comic book guy. He also writes for Mad Magazine. I came across him. The first thing was... Tales to Suffice was a Kickstarter, one of the early Kickstarters I backed, and it was huge, and it's really fun, and it was a comedy book after all those parodied with all the Marvel old books, and he even had a faux Stan Lee huckster character that went around. So I'd see him at some of these different shows. Mort Finkelman is his Stan Lee guy, and most recently, he came to prominence over the, I think 4 or 5 years ago, he did some of his own Marvel hip-hop mashup covers. So you can find that if you just look up Kenny Kyle and Marvel hip-hop covers and everything. And I'm ignorant of that music, so I don't have a lot of understanding of all that. But and they were pretty cool. But I got this because I want to talk about Death Trip. Now, yeah. I have the print issues, but I believe it's on Comixology, and he also puts it up on the web. And maybe in the show notes we'll have a link to that. I don't know. I don't know who puts together the show notes. But Death Trip is a black and white book set in the future with a fair amount of kind of Warren Ellis, Hunter S. Thompson sort of frenetic energy to it. Very kind of like these slick corporate companies run everything.
I would say, of course, my point of reference is 2099.
That's another good one, but it's the future, and so they've been able to stretch out people's lives. So the key thing is, you know, when you get bored, how are you going to end your life? Mm-hmm. So this company, Death Trip, or Peak Life Experience.
Oh, so it makes them immortal.
No, science has, but this is, you basically get to decide your own death. So they set up this virtual reality assisted suicide.
That sounds neat.
So, you know, after you've lived for 100 years or whatever and you're bored, so it opens with a woman doing an Evel Knievel stunt that goes wrong.
You didn't mention the great cover this and logo this book has, too.
Yes, it's got this kind of spiraling logo with the character, sort of Mad Men-esque almost.
Yeah, grabs your attention.
Kenny's got a great sense of design. But anyways, our lead character is this sort of slick hustler who's trying to work his way up the company line, Dominic Green. Mm-hmm. And he spends most of his time whacked out on all these futuristic drugs, and he's just trying to move up the ladder, so to speak, but he's kind of falling apart from taking all these drugs and doing all these. If you spend too much time in the virtual reality, I guess it kind of cooks your brain too. So he's having the problem of he's seeing dead people, kind of ghosts that other people can't see anymore. And that's interfering, but he doesn't want to hear it because he wants that promotion.
Are they real ghosts or is this all in his head?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're real because there's a piece of fact that comes. I've only read the first two chapters. Mm-hmm. But it's like, so that kind of futuristic world where, and he's the reluctant hero. Because in the second chapter, he gets his, but one of the ghosts tells, is trying to get him to help her. Mm-hmm. And then there, it's, he's the type of character that's not interested in that. He's interested in doing things for his own gain. So that's the tension of it. The pull is, does he help her while his life is increasingly falling apart? Like he's seeing more and more of these ghosts. He's having trouble telling what's really happening and what's not. But I thought it was mixed in with a fair amount of humor. Kevin, what was your take on it?
Yeah, I was really interested in it. And I just wanted, I was kind of debating by the end of the second chapter, like, whether I want to see, like, I'm sure it would still be crazy if we're going into, like, a murder mystery thing. But it was so crazy up to that point. I'm like, I almost don't want to see a more traditional thing like that get introduced. Like, just more crazy and corporate shenanigans and ladder climbing and, you know, selling more things on, selling more of these scenarios to the clients or whatever, but I'm sure it won't be straightforward anyways if we go into that type of stuff.
Do they show a lot of the ways people kill themselves?
No, we don't have a lot of that, at least in the first two. We have a few, and we only see the big one in the opening. And yeah. He talks about some of the other ones, but it's really his story of trying to climb the greasy pole to get to the mm-hmm. top while everything's falling down around him. And he was negotiating another one. There's a humorous section in the second book, but he's seeing all the ghosts, so he's having trouble telling who's really there and who's mm-hmm. just in his head.
And then he's asking people, you see that person, right? That there's a person there?
And what's also fun is Kenny, because it's humorous, Kenny has a lot of fun with the character design. So we'll have like these short, squat guys. Like the lead character has this giant bush of hair on top of him.
Yeah.
But like he's got this one character that he's talking to who's like this short, fat, sweaty dude. We've talked about how much I love my comic book characters who sweat.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. You like holograms who sweat? Isn't that the weird thing, though? He's seeing ghosts, but aren't there, like, he's, like, virtual reality and holograms. It's, like, how many more, like, not there things can you put into one comic?
Yeah, so there's a real question of what's really happening. Like I said, augmented by his problems, his drugs.
Yeah.
And as we talked about, Kenny's got a great sense of graphic design. And I really like, he's very restrained in his use of like splash pages. I mean, they're there and I like that. And he puts a lot of detail, but it's not overly, he's not afraid to jam a lot of panels on a page if it calls for it or do sort of interesting panel integration. So I think the story flow is very clear. Like I like it aesthetically, but it's also like I wasn't, sometimes you read books and you're a little confused about order or panel reading or what went on. And I thought the storytelling here was, there was no, I mean, there's ambiguity, but that's intentional as to what's real and what's not. It wasn't from, wait, what happened in this panel transition or that type of thing.
Well, I thought some of the one page where they're like walking the staircase, I'm like, oh, this could get confusing, but it flows well enough where you know where you're supposed to, where your eyeballs are supposed to be going.
Yeah, it's a crazy, like some of those scenes are very crazy, but I think that's part of it. And the black and white with a little bit of gray I like too.
Yeah. I also like when there was the where they had all the ghosts, like when he's thinking about things, he's in the dark black and all the ghosts that are talking are sort of like grayed out. They're like, they're not as there as he is.
Yeah. It's all phased out like a weird.
Yeah.
It's just, I think, well done. Like I said, the ambiguity seems all always intentional, which I like. But you can get this on his Comixology. He's also doing, you can get Tales of Vice. His other current title is Rhyme Travelers, which I have the first few issues, but I need to read them so I can give them an appropriate opine. Like I said, they're Death Trip, the first three chapters are also online for free. His website, talestosuffice.com, has a, you know, a shop. He does this Ferrari Boys comic too, and some of his collected Jam covers you're going to lease, and all his merch is available there. But I'm hoping to see him at Long Beach and get issue number 3, because I've been holding off reading it because I like getting it in print. But again, that's Kenny Kyle. K-E-I-L is the last name. And the book's Death Trip. Kevin, what more have you got for us?
What more do I have? That's a good question.
Or should I push it back to Phil?
I don't know. Well, he thinks about that. We'll talk about this one quick. I read one recently by Titan Comics.
Ooh, Titan. We like that.
Yeah. This is one of the ones I was complaining about, though, because it's, I'm paying basically $10 for 40 pages just because it's a hardcover.
You do love your Doctor Who, Phil.
Yeah, the problem you like is, your European stuff. That's why.
No, because this is preventing me from buying more now. Because the thing is, this came out in 2011. It's a French one, and so this is them reprinting it. Like, why not just give us at least 2 in one book? And they released the second one pretty close afterwards, too. Like, I'm not paying this much for... Hold on, let me tell you. It's, like, 48 pages.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it to me.
Yeah, I think they were probably trying to reproduce the original release and everything rather than...
Otherwise, this is something I would like to collect otherwise.
Yeah.
That's the only thing stopping me now. But basically, yeah, it's called The Rage, Volume 1, Zombie Generation. And I know it says that, Kevin, but it's not zombies.
Oh, so it's just like a word, zombie generation, like you're moving around like a zombie, not a literal zombie.
No, because they're in this book, they're looking for a cure to fix the kids, because it's only kids that got infected. So basically they like storm in, for example, like a big football field, let's say, and they just hurt all the kids in there, and they're like looking for a cure kind of thing. But... So they're still alive. It's basically like a rage thing again. So basically this story centers around a mother who lost her kid to the disease, and her kid killed all her other kids. It was in a pretty brutal scene. And so he's in one of these places. So she, to get inside these places, she takes this dangerous job where like they're not army guys, but basically they come down in a helicopter and they'll drop off supplies where these kids are. And they have to use this device which sets off like this ringing that only they can hear, and it keeps them away. So you get there's a couple points here where their devices fail, and then they just start getting surrounded by these children, and the children just tear them apart, kind of thing. And like I say, like, it's a cool story. It kept me engaged in everything, the politics and everything, like how these adults are dealing in a world without kids. You're not allowed to have kids anymore, like that kind of thing. Well, they try and find this cure. But I don't know if I want to get the second book. Like if there's only one more book, I'll pick it up. But if this is like a 6-volume series or something like that, I'm not going to pay $60 for this or however much it is. But yeah, there's not much more to say than that because it's so short.
I believe the French comics are pretty strong on creator rights. Pat Mills, the English comic writer I like so much, in a bunch of interviews has talked about how he does so many comics in France because he likes the treatment he gets there, even though he's from England. And a lot of his books now, he does a lot of work for the French comic book publisher. So maybe it's something
they make involved good comics,
with the license that it costs so much or they're only allowed. So, you know what I mean? It might be that end of it.
Well, I guess it's the extra costs of translating it also. So there is. So, yeah, when you put it that way, yeah, there's definitely it makes more sense. I just feel like I'd feel better if they at least put two in here and then charge me more. Like, I hate having a hardcover that's so thin. Like, I think that's my biggest problem.
Yeah, I think that's a difference in...
Like, just make it a floppy then. Like.
Yeah. Yeah, the audiences in different countries want different things, so... Because
this will take up a lot of book space when it doesn't need to.
Yeah, they like that weird... I was thinking, like, those Asterix albums are like that, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is just...
Kind of those really thin... hardcover ones.
Yeah.
I think that's like Kevin said.
So yeah, I guess that's their style, yeah. Which is unfortunate for me. But otherwise, yeah, like I love these Titan books. Like everything Titan reprints or puts out, a lot of them I really, really love.
Yeah, I recently talked about still on the Death Sentence London and the Surface. So yeah.
Yeah, I want to try that one still, Death Sentence.
Yeah. We'll have to restrict your Titan output on this podcast. Like,
well,
you know. You put restrictions on the Valiant out, you know. So
hey, don't get carried away. We're nothing like you. We're nothing like you.
You don't want to be like me.
So Kevin, you got something ready now? I give you some time.
Do I? I don't know. I don't know if Andrew wants to go into the Star Reach, Imagine, or.
Do we have time for that, or should I? Or should we just do a few quick hits?
I can do a quick hit.
Okay.
So I'm really.
I thought that might be a better save for a longer segment than.
Plus, it'll give you a chance to read a few more too.
Yeah, exactly that too. But give us one of your quick hits. I got another one.
All right. Low from Image Comics by Remender Tuccini and McCraig. I'm really liking how this whole series is developing. I can remember before. I think it was Fraction was writing something. I'm like, it just seemed like it could spring off of like some of the Atlantis underwater stuff. Like there's so much more underwater than there is on surface. So I was like, yeah, I want to see a book that could have a lot of craziness. And it's almost like it's so underwater. It's almost like it's in a way. It's like like a crazy sky thing, like you know 29.9, how they had like the flying cars. Well, it's like if you draw up a city underwater, and like you're gonna have all your buildings going upward, and you'll still have the same movement. It'll just be underwater vessels like going past building windows that could be like miles high or whatever. Like it sort of maps the same way in my brain, which might be crazy, but. But this series
is the art. I always think water is kind of tricky, because how do you show it? Like, do you just do it with coloring, or?
Well, I that's why I think the artwork is done, you know, pretty well here. It's not 100% distinct. Like, it's not like photorealistic or something like that. Like, yeah, there's coloring and like details that are just. Like, you don't see every detail in the background or stuff like that. But they sort of, like, jumped forward and then jumped back to show you some of the things that are going around. And since the planet is like people are expecting to just like die off any day, you see like a lot of different like underwater colonies, that a lot of like anarchy or craziness is going on. There's one place where they have like a minister of thought where he's destroying anything that has beauty. So like the painters, the poets, writers, artists, whoever, like anything that gives citizens hope, like that things could be nice on the surface, or that they'll survive, is like those people are round up and put in jail or killed. And there's, you follow this one character, and then they're like someone that's close to them, they find out that, you know, they're into distributing some of these materials, and once the minister of thought gets onto them, it's like, well, I might as well kill someone I care about rather than having them be discovered and everything like that. And I'm like, that's pretty brutal. But it also seems like there's a fantasy type of thing to it, like big mech robots. Or then I think of like in Final Fantasy how they had these like sort of war mechs that you would put your body inside, and then it would seal up. So I don't know. I think like that stuff like works really well underwater, because you sort of, with all the pressure and everything, you sort of need something like that. But it's like coded to the person's DNA, so anyone can't just use it. So far, there's been a long journey in one of the stories to like the surface, and it's like 9 issues, and they still haven't reached the surface. And there's been a lot of traveling and things going on in the meantime. And you're like, wow, I really want to see what sort of like how the messed up surface looks like. I'm also put in the mind of what was that other Image book, The Undertow, mm-hmm. where that had a yes. lot. Yeah, that had a lot of like mythology and stuff about things underwater and the surface and all the different vegetation and worlds and things that crop up. Like I love like type of stuff.
That one had a real fantastical art style too, if I remember correctly. Kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, those two
appropriate to world building.
Yeah, those two books both have, like, I wouldn't say a traditional.
Isn't it a type of art though that where sometimes it's hard to follow? Maybe like the panels and stuff. Like it looked a little messy to me.
It is a little messy, like sort of like painterly, or like it's not like you're not 100% sure all the time. But I think it being underwater and everything,
and that's and it what just kept me away. Is I don't know if I was like the I like the art, but at the same time, I don't know if it's good for storytelling.
There's a lot to look at though, and the composition of the pages is usually really well done with like the water and the upward movement and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I think that balances everything out pretty well. And then I'm really looking forward to like the central concept where they had probes like looking for other planets that they could possibly move to, but no one thinks that's really a possibility, but one of them might have returned to Earth with information. Mm-hmm. But then other people are trying to suppress that information, or they just think it's an error, like the like other probes have done. So I assume we'll be getting to that point.
Well, I have a quick one too, hot off the Comixology presses. As you guys know, I have my share of issues with Comixology, but sometimes it's the only way to get your comics. Mm-hmm. And in this case, the new issue of Hellbillies came out, number 4. This is from Kingbone Press. In the past, I'd bought their books directly from them, usually via either paper or PDF or whatever, but now they just have it through Comixology, which also offers the DRM free backup via PDF or CBR or CBZ, whichever one is the code. So the new one came out. This is Brian Bowles and John Westhoff, and here the colors are Timothy O'Brien, who does a pinup in the beginning too. And these are, we've talked about this book before, but it's a hillbilly monster hunters. So it's a family of hill folk down in the south. And they sort of run around chasing these monsters down while they brew their moonshine and all the other things that are associated with the genre.
Yeah, don't they sing their songs too?
Deliverance?
And we haven't had any of those scenes yet, but number four picks up. It's still within the same continuity, but it's a newer adventure. Although they've retained the character from the first three issues, Jimmy, the little boy who's possessed. And this one drives it off, and I just think that as the series goes on, I've enjoyed it from the beginning, but I think the creators are finding their niche more and more, and I really think Bowles does a great job, especially on the sort of pastoral scenes. There's a few wider ones where it's just all the detail in the forest and the trees and everything, and the mystery is building. There's also some humor placed in it with some of the types of cameos and interactions with the various characters. But Hellbillies 4 on Comixology.
What do you mean? What do you mean by cameos?
There are two parody figures who are perhaps reminiscent of John Travolta and Samuel Jackson's characters from Pulp Fiction.
Hearing you talk about this comic a couple times now, it's one I've always wanted, but you said it's not available in print?
It is. This one isn't. Okay. Some of the
original... Oh, that's why you had to go to Comixology.
It used to be the very first one, I believe, I have in print. And there were also excerpts in the Kingbone. They did a little mini in the Kingbone Presents, which was like an anthology of their different titles. So I have some of it in print, but now they've moved this. I'm hoping that maybe they'll do what they did with World's Strongest Mailman, which is do a print collection of all of it or some chunk of it. Once yes, it's like more. Because I think doing these things with floppies probably isn't as smart financially, and I think people are much. I know I'm when I cruise Artist Alley. I mean, I might buy a single issue, but I'm much more likely to get either I'll get the number one issue or I'll get the trade, unless there's some kind of great sale going on. It's rare for me, especially for an unknown creative team, to be like, "I'll give me the first four issues." You know what I mean? But
I'll do that usually. Like, usually, I'll just pick them all up because I figure that's my only chance. Like, if I end up liking the first issue, I'm not going to get another chance to get them all, you know, unless I order them online or something.
Eh, they'll be back, I always figure. Besides, I've had enough of
But you go to, like, 500 cons a year, though.
Well, I do tend to go to a lot, but... Yeah, so if you like kind of Hellboy's world with a bit more humor, it's some good-natured hillbilly action in it, I suggest this Hellbilly series, and the new number four is out.
You know,
and I think the cover reminded me a lot of there's this astral projection, which reminded me a lot of Alan White's Power Principle. But I was told by the creators it was entirely coincidental or all in my head. They might have been too polite to say.
You know, I thought of two more Fan Expo notes. Action Lab was there.
Oh, yeah? I would have loved to have been there. I would have bought all their stuff.
Yeah.
Shit.
And then I also got this mug that, of course, I had to send to Leaf Insect Man, you know, a picture of, it's the Titan from Attack on Titan where you drink out of his skull.
Oh, yeah?
I was hoping that they would have some, like, a MODOK or something, but this is equally as awesome.
That's going to be an indie comic book movie we could talk about soon, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the first one was already out in Australia and Japan, but not here.
I'll get to talk
about Australians.
They get things first sometimes.
All right, I guess that's an episode.
I guess so. This is the episode where I ran too long.
Or you talk too much.
Apparently. Don't listen to this episode.
Well, I'd like to thank everyone for listening. And also, Steve, feel free to come back anytime.
I didn't hear
we
anything.
Miss you. All is forgiven.
What did we do wrong, Steve?
I'll read those Conan, Steve.
It's your Valiant talk.
Well, the good thing when Steve was in here, I got all my Valiant talk out, so Steve doesn't need to hear
that. Oh, yeah, I'm sure you got it all out. I'll believe that.
Well, I just read, you know, Fallen Injack. That was pretty good. Like, at the beginning, all these, like, robots sort of came in on him, and he was, like a monk with a sword, and I was thinking, Samurai Jack!
Well, until all three of us stop reading indie comics... Keep making ours indie comic book noise.